Good morning and welcome to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske today. Here's something you may not have realized. Of the 40 players on the Kansas City Royals expanded roster, that's the team that they'll be drawing on now through the end of the season and into the postseason we're planning on too, of those 40 players, fully 17 of them were born or raised in Latin American countries. Dominican Republic, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, Brazil, Cuba, they're all represented on our hometown team. And that's pretty typical of the majors these days. But it wasn't always that way. In fact, for a long time, Latinos, like their African American peers, had a color barrier to overcome in big league baseball. Joining us is Adrian Burgos, Jr. He is a professor of history and African American studies and also Latino studies at the University of Illinois and author of Playing America's Game, Baseball, Latinos, and the Color Line. He's joining us from station WILL in Urbana, Illinois this morning. Adrian, welcome to Up to Date.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you. And also Raymond Doswell, he's the vice president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum down at 18th and Vine, and he's here in our studio. Ray, good to have you back.
And it's good to be here with you and my good friend Adrian.
I'm glad you guys know each other, even though you're a few hundred miles apart here today.
Indeed.
We should mention that both Adrian and Ray will be together at the Kansas City Public Library later this week. Their presentation, They Too Played America's Game, is on Thursday evening at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch. So we'll have more information about that later. You can also find it on our website. Welcome to both of you. Adrian, I want to start with you. I think most Americans know some of the story of Jackie Robinson and his landmark entrance to the majors as the first African-American, but I don't think there's similar awareness about Latino history in baseball. Is there a turning point, a moment like Jackie Robinson's moment, when we talk about Latino baseball history?
Well, most baseball fans are familiar with the story of Roberto Clemente.
Right.
And Roberto Clemente really captured the imagination and the attention of fans, of baseball fans everywhere. What they most didn't know, and this is where the work of the Negro League Museum is very important, is the vast majority of Latinos that had played during the era the color line was in place overwhelmingly played in the Negro Leagues. We're talking about the Jose Mendezes, the Cristobal Torriente, Horacio Martinez, and one of my favorite players who started in the Negro Leagues and then reached stardom in the Major Leagues was Orestes Santonino Ariete Minoso. We know him as Mini Minoso.
Yeah, and that rolls more easily off your tongue than it would off of mine, so I'm glad you said it. You know, Ray Doswell from the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, even the name Negro Leagues implies that those were about African-Americans playing baseball, but there were a surprising number of Latinos in the league, at least surprising to our modern ears.
Quite a few, and what's important to understand is that in many respects, for the majority culture, black was black. So I have to remind our patrons that this was not just for African-Americans, but for Afro-Latinos as well. This was, if they wanted to play baseball in the United States, this was their opportunity. There were a handful of what you may say as white Cuban or white Latino players who did get a chance to play Major League Baseball or in other places. But for black Latinos, if they wanted to play baseball in the United States, this was their opportunity, and that, and many of the names that Adrian just mentioned, that's who they were.
Well, let's go back as far as we can, Adrian. What's the origin of Latino players entering the game of baseball in the United States?
We see the first Latino, Latin American-born player appear in what was the major leagues of its era in 1872. That was Esteban Bayan, who was the son of very wealthy Cubans who was sent to study at Fordham University. And in addition to his book studies, he learned baseball, and he was quite good. And he left school early, as some students are apt to do, to pursue a professional career. And he started playing professional baseball. And like would happen to many Latinos, his name would become anglicized, and you would find him being mentioned as Steve Bellion. And but after him, we also had U.S. Latinos like Vicente Nava, who played in the National League, which was the major league of the 1880s. And so you had these different avenues for Latinos to start playing. And as Ray mentioned, there were about 55 Latinos who played in the major leagues from the 1880s into the year that Jackie Robinson broke the color line in 1947. That same period, we had about 240 who had played in the black baseball circuit in the United States, Latinos. So the presentation of Latinos is much greater in the Negro Leagues than it was in the Major Leagues during that period.
And I want to talk about their presence in the Negro Leagues because I think that is a less understood part of the history. But as far as their presence in the Major Leagues, we're talking back in the 1870s and 1880s. How did that happen? This is not a time that was known for the acceptance of racial diversity in baseball. How did they manage to play? You mentioned changing their names, but obviously didn't they look different than other players?
Well, let's take the story of the Mexican-American Vicente Nava, who was presented as Sandy Nava. They transliterated his name from Vicente to Sandy. And in fact, he played in California originally under his stepfather's name, which was Irwin. So we first come across the greatest catcher on the Pacific Slope as he was introduced to National League fans in 1882, Vicente Nava, as Sandy Irwin. What's fascinating is the Providence Grays board of directors decided to change his name back to Nava and use him as an advertising card, but they didn't say he was Mexican. They said he was Spanish. And so there we see the kind of the intricacies of race being played out, where a ball player who's Latino is being presented as Spanish so that he's not seen as Mexican. And later on, what Major League owners would do, they would present these racially ambiguous Cuban players as, he's not black, he's Cuban. And that's what would allow for some leeway in getting these talented players in.
And Ray, there were entire Negro Leagues baseball teams that were Cuban, so-called Cuban teams, right?
There were teams that were made up of Cuban or Cuban expatriates that traveled across the United States and into Latin countries, seemingly as an attraction. It seemed as if, and I can't pinpoint this as an anthropologist or anything like that, but it seemed to be less of a stigma if you were a traveling team and you came in and you were Spanish or Hispanic in this regard, because you're playing up, I guess, the exotic nature of who you were, so to speak, in order to get games and to promote yourself as an attraction. And then obviously there's some very good talented baseball players there. But to one of the legends in the Negro Leagues is one of those teams was called the Cuban X Giants. Mm-hmm. They had a mix of Latin players and American black players. And one of the legends around that team was that the American players would pretend to speak Spanish in order to kind of keep, you know, to keep the attraction up.
The African-American players on the team pretended they spoke a fake version of Spanish.
Yes, gibberish, if you would.
Wow.
In order to kind of keep up the ruse of this is an all Hispanic team of sorts. And that's one of the legends in the Negro Leagues. But just this, you know, this challenge of being black in America and being treated like a second-class citizen was always prevalent, always there. And these are just the gymnastics, as I always say, that people had to do in order just to be able to play baseball.
I'm curious, you mentioned that in a lot of the American consciousness, black was black. So there wasn't a distinction between black Caribbean or black Latin American players and African American players. But obviously the players themselves knew the differences. How easily integrated were Latino Americans and African Americans in the early days of the Negro Leagues?
And I want to be careful about that in this sense. Obviously, yes, there are definite cultural differences in upbringing and, of course, language that American-born blacks and folks from Latin America had to endure. But I'm always mindful to tell patrons that because as moving forward into the discussion today about Major League Baseball and the percentage-wise lack of American-born black players compared to Hispanic players, there always seems to be this argument of kind of separating the two, and that it's a us against them kind of thing, which I regret. Obviously, there's much more in common culturally through the diaspora than we are apart. So I'm always mindful to let folks know that, you know, they come from the African diaspora. We have this shared experience with baseball and many other things. But I think to answer your question, the Hispanic player certainly was able to move into the black community in different enclaves, but also in places like New York, where there was great immigrant populations, and for a Puerto Rican player, for example, could move as that culture developed and those communities could move seamlessly between them. Dr. Burgos's other great book on the history of Alejandro Pompez, the great manager impresario of baseball, kind of demonstrates that in his life experiences.
Adrian, you were going to jump in there.
Yeah, because one of the points that Ray's building is this shared experience of baseball. And 2 points to that fact was, one is that when Rube Foster was trying to form a Negro National League, he started really in 1908, 1909, various efforts. He always had a team of Cuban players, they were called the Cuban Stars at that point, that were part of that effort to start a national league in the United States. Now, the other part about this is that shared experience of being black and of suffering from Jim Crow segregation inside of baseball and throughout U.S. society also took place in a different way in the Cuban League, the Latin American leagues, recruiting African-American players to play in Cuba. And so, for example, we have Rube Foster, Grant Home Run Johnson, Pop Lloyd, and a number of great African-American Negro League players who are coming to Cuba in 1905, 1906, 1907, and playing in the Cuban League, which was racially integrated. And that experience of playing together in Latin America and then those players coming back, that is some Cuban players beginning to come out of Cuba to play in the Negro Leagues and in organized baseball, is what that shared experience was and the foundation for what would become the Negro National League that was started in 1920.
Almost sort of an exchange program.
A talented exchange program.
We're talking today about the history of Latinos in baseball. Adrian Burgos from the University of Illinois is with us, as well as Raymond Doswell from the Negro League Baseball Museum here in Kansas City. A number of Latinos, as we've mentioned, played in the majors. But in the early days, they weren't referred to as Latino or Hispanic. Often they were called Spanish. Why was that, Adrian?
I think that really drew on notions of race during the early 20th century, where, and even to put a finer point on it, the first two Cubans to play in the National League in 1911, they were introduced to the Cincinnati Reds fan as two of the purest bars of Castilian soap, not just Spanish. And Castile was the region of Spain that held out the longest to Moorish rule, and they were first to come back out of Moorish rule. And so they were seen as the purest of the Spaniards, who were the least affected by 400 years of Moorish rule. And I say that's partly, laughing at it. But the other point of it is Major League team owners wanted to disquiet those who might be upset that these possibly not white players were coming into the league. So they presented them as the whitest of the Spanish types that you could have, Castilian.
So there was a very literal color barrier. The lightness of the skin was lifted up as what made it okay.
And they used new terms. And, Castilian was not a readily used term in baseball, but it became so in order to explain how we should allow these players. And ultimately, as I argue in Playing America's Game, the function of the color line was to prevent black players from performing. And it allowed for non-white players to enter into the league. And that's why you have Latinos who entered. But then you had this dozen or so number of players who actually moved between the Negro Leagues and the Major Leagues prior to Jackie Robinson. And the way to understand that is, in fact, that Major League owners created this new category. Black is Cuban, even though you look at him and he's darker than Roy Campanella. I'm talking about Roberto Estrella.
Uh-huh.
And this is the way that race operated within baseball and the way the color line operated in baseball.
Ray, put this in context for us in the broader context of the Negro Leagues, baseball leagues, and also just the African-American experience in general. How different does this Latino experience seem from the broader African-American experience in the game?
Well, as noted, for a couple of people, it allowed them to be able to move freely. Well, free is maybe a little strong, but to be able to move between worlds, so to speak. But at the same time, the Latino player, especially the Afro-Latino player, is experiencing the same pitfalls as the Black American player. The segregation on the road, the segregation from the standpoint of places to eat, places to stay, The challenges of being seen by the majority culture as inferior, of being called the same names, the same dirty names in many respects. And then in some cases, at least initially, having to deal with all that and overcome various language barriers when you're coming to the United States. This becomes, I think, as you start to get into the integration of Major League Baseball, you start to hear more and more stories, really, I guess you could say horror stories from the standpoint of young Latino players trying to make that transition to the United States and ending up in places. And this is the same for Black American players, although they may understand these regions a little bit better, but a young Latino player coming to the United States, having to play his minor league baseball in the American South and trying to navigate all of that as well. And so there's this competitive brotherhood between African-American-born players and the Latino players. But in the Negro Leagues, they were good teammates. They formed their teams together. They played together. Many of them were superstars and leaders in the Negro Leagues. But it was a shared experience that they all had to overcome together.
I should mention that Ray Doswell and Adrian Burgos, our guests today here on Up to Date, will both be speaking at the Kansas City Public Library on Thursday evening at 6:30. You can find more information at the library's website or a link from our website, the Plaza Branch, 6:30 on Thursday. Adrian, you've sometimes referred to Orestes or Minnie Minoso as the Latin Jackie Robinson. Why do you say that?
Well, Minnie was the first Afro-Latino who entered into the major leagues as a Black Latino. There had been others before him who had some African ancestry, as the term was used then, but they were brought in as Cuban and not Black. And that's the story of Roberto Estrella I was mentioning before with the Senators. And the story of Minoso was very similar to Robinson. Everyone saw him and received him as a Black man, and he had to take that on. And as Ray was just mentioning, the other dynamic was indeed of dealing with what Orlando Cepeda called the two strikes that are against them, one for being Black and the other one for being Latino. And so dealing with the cultural barriers, dealing with the racial barrier, and the excellence that Minoso performed on the field in the midst of that, where the other part is, so Minnie Minoso used to crowd the plate and get hit a lot. And then Minoso was never really in an on-field skirmish. He had to battle the, not just the stereotype of the Black man, but of the hot-blooded Latin as well. And when he successfully did so, that gave the space for someone like Felipe Alou and Roberto Clemente to speak much more openly about the hostilities, the racism, the discrimination that they face as Black Latinos.
And why do we know Roberto Clemente's story? I think I may be wrong, but I think his name is more familiar to the average American sports fan. Why is his story so well known?
I think there's two reasons for that. One was he got to play on the biggest stage, the World Series, and he got a base hit in every single World Series game he appeared in.
Wow!
And so there, like when the time came, he was on performance. The other, and that was showcased in the 1971 World Series. The other point was, of course, his tragic death, where his push for human respect, for treatment of one's fellow human with dignity, was constantly what his call was while he was a ball player. And then he dies on this humanitarian mission, taking relief supplies, not to his native country, to Nicaragua, a place he had visited previously and had enjoyed interactions with the people there. And so that story has really captured the imagination of many Latinos, because what greater example of the spirit of who we aspire to be than Roberto Clemente? And then, the 5-year waiting period was waived for him, and he was inducted immediately into the Baseball Hall of Fame, which really enshrined that moment.
I want to jump forward to the present day, which is the story of Latino players in Major League Baseball growing exponentially and over a fairly short amount of time. Of those 17 Kansas City Royals I mentioned earlier who are on the 40-man roster, 7 of them are from the Dominican Republic, which is a fairly small country, geographic people. 5 more are from Venezuela, 3 more from Puerto Rico. None of these are huge nations, but they're disproportionately represented, it seems, on the Royals roster and maybe in Major League Baseball in general. Ray Doswell, what's happening there?
There's a the Society of American Baseball Research, there's some researchers who've done a study that at some point around the early 1980s, if I remember it right, there's this shift where the percentage of American Black participation and Latino participation is about even as far as participation in Major League Baseball, somewhere around 16-17%, and then it just starts to take off from there, where American-born players are down now with 8-10%, and the Latino players up well over 20%. There's been certainly the talent is there, and Major League Baseball has been able to mine that talent coming out of these small communities in the Caribbean and other places. They're extremely talented, and they've been able to build that up. Some might argue that then at a certain point they go in and almost, this is a strong word, but industrialize it to a degree to start really getting players to come up to the United States, making an investment there that some have argued has not until recently been made in the United States to get young people in the urban core and other places to play baseball. That's changing, but that was the criticism of Major League Baseball.
Well, and it was offered as a criticism, as not good for the communities where these players were coming from. Is it your perception, Adrian Burgos, that that the rise of, say, Dominican baseball players has been a good thing for the Dominican Republic?
It's been a wonderful thing for the Dominican Republic because of the remittances that even minor league players. And the thing that most people are unaware of, that about 50% of minor leaguers are Latin American. And so their representation is even greater. And now it's primarily at the rookie level and the low A ball level of baseball. The other point is that some of us historians have theorized that the turn to Latin America really is coincident with the rise of the really big free agent contracts in baseball. And so the cost offset of paying a big free agent, you know, tens of millions of dollars, is to acquire talent more cheaply. And so they would go to the Dominican Republic and Venezuela and try to sign a prospect. For example, Sammy Sosa was signed for the same signing bonus of $4,500 that Jackie Robinson received. Robinson signed in 1945, and Sosa signed in 1986.
Before we go today, I want to mention and give you a chance to mention, Ray, an event that's coming up this Saturday. So we've mentioned the Thursday night event at the library, but one of the great Puerto Rican baseball players of the modern era, Benji Molina, is going to be in town, right?
Yes, he's written a memoir about his father and the influence of him on baseball. It's titled Molina, so it's just, and those who are baseball fans know that he and his brothers are all catchers in Major League Baseball and have been very successful baseball players. We'll have him at the museum to discuss and sign his book at 1:30 on Saturday at the Negro Leagues Museum.
That's Ray Doswell. He's vice president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum down at 18th and Vine. Ray, I want to thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Adrian Burgos is author of Playing America's Game, Baseball, Latinos, and the Color Line. He's a professor at the University of Illinois in Urbana. Thank you so much for being with us, Adrian.
Thanks for having me on.
What a great conversation. Wish we could go on longer. And again, join them on Thursday evening at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. They'll be teaching or giving a presentation on They Too Played America's Game.